Welcome to the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. Show notes, links, and contact details can be found at robnunphoto.com. That's www.robnunphoto.com. SCL is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network, and loads of other great tech podcasts can be found over at www.techpodcast.com. Now on with the show. Everybody, and welcome to SCL 194. My name's Rob from robnunphoto.com, and this is my little audio diary about my journey through the wonderful world of photography. Hope everybody's had a great week. It's June the 3rd here in Gosport in Hampshire on the south coast of the UK, and it's kind of we're kind of in the middle of a long bank holiday weekend, because it's the Queen's Silver Jubilee celebrations, and so there's all sorts of things going on around the country. There was a big river parade down the Thames today with hundreds and hundreds of boats taking part. Unfortunately, the English weather has come in and made it very rainy, but we watched some of it on the television and it was very good indeed. Not much going on around in Gosport, and there's plenty of street parties and stuff like that, and there is actually a festival going on down in Walpole Park with some bands on. But Suzanne went to see HMS Diamond, which is one of the Royal Naval's latest destroyers, coming into harbour on Friday, and they did a 21 gun salute, and then there was a formation of helicopters that came in as well. All very exciting. Unfortunately, I was at work, but I might be able to get up tomorrow and take some photographs of some of the bunting and various stuff that's on display around, because it's quite good to record that for posterity, wouldn't it, and stuff. So there we go. And luckily enough, I've actually got 3 days off. I've got today and the next 2 days off, the Monday and Tuesday, so I'm really looking forward to spending some quality time with Oliver and Suzanne, and hopefully getting out and taking some photographs too. Being a Sunday, car boot day today, but because it threw it down last night, there wasn't very many people at the car boot. But that does remind me, there will be another car boot on tomorrow, so maybe there'll be a few more people, so we can go and have a look for some camera bargains. However, what I did do today was picked up some batteries for my Nikon F55 film SLR that I got for a fiver from the car boot sale not that long ago. And I've loaded it up with Ilford Delta 3200 black and white film, a massive ISO. Hopefully that's going to give me some fantastically grainy images. Because of the ISO was so high, I don't think many of the SLRs that I've got could really handle that. I don't think the OM2 goes up that high. Definitely the Minolta SRT101 doesn't go up that high. Well, obviously you could shoot with the film, but you'd have to, it's called pulling it, when you deliberately overexpose, that's pushing it, isn't it? Sometimes I get confused with pushing and pulling. Well, because the film would be 3200, but if I was shooting it in the SRT101, I'd have to, say, shoot it at 800. So the camera would be overexposing the film massively, wouldn't it? Yeah, so I would be pushing the film a lot, or pulling it. I don't know. I can't remember. Anyway, the Nikon F55 can handle that anyway, so it can recognise DX coding up to above 3200 as well. I'll have to be quite careful, because out in bright sunlight, if I'm using the wider apertures, what happens is the camera runs out of shutter speed. You know, I think you can go up to a 2/2000th of a second. But with ISO 3200 film, that could well mean that it's still going to overexpose. But I'll have to look at the manual and see if it gives you a little warning of that. The F55 is an interesting camera. You can pick them up really cheap on eBay. It's a modern DSLR. I don't think they still make it, but they came out in about I'm probably going to get this wrong, but I think they were still making it in 2002. Plastic bodied, tends to come with a nice 28-100 autofocus lens. It's got everything from automatic through to manual mode on it, and the scene position modes. Look, it's basically very, very similar to something like a D40 or a Canon 350D, but film. Lightweight. I picked this one up, as I said, for a fiver. I'm looking forward to see the shots I get out of it. And what I like about it, it's nice and light, you know. Some of the older film cameras can be quite heavy. Should be good. So I'm going to be trying to work my way through that film. Maybe even try to do it over the next couple of days and get the film developed myself and then get it scanned. I've still got to scan some black and white film that I haven't done yet, so maybe I'll get time to do that as well. Went for a nice little photo walk on work Friday, actually. We only have half an hour for lunch, but I thought, no, damn it, the weather's good, I'm going to make a real effort. And as soon as sort of lunchtime came around, I took a late lunch about 3 o'clock, I jumped in my car and zoomed down to Hilsea Lines. Often I talk about Gosport and the forts that surround it, and the idea of the forts that surround Gosport was to defend Portsmouth, which is the naval dockyard, in times of invasion. But Portsmouth itself, where I work, is also surrounded by lots of earthworks, and an extra moat that is at the north of Portsmouth. This is Hilsea Line. So I zoomed up there in the car, a car jumped out and ran along and took some shots. Again, time was very limited and I hadn't been there before, so I was working blind, but I think I probably managed to get some nice shots of maybe some water things. There were some dead trees in the water, you know, they always look interesting, don't they? But anyway, I'll edit those this week and get them up on the Flickr photo stream. What I'd like to talk about this week is the lie of the lens. a little subject about how the different focal lengths we choose can affect the look of the photographs and how we can take advantage of that, or how we should be aware of it when we're taking our photographs. I have talked about it before, but there was a recent program on the television where they're talking about a guy called Flinders Petrie, who was a famous archaeologist who spent a lot of time in Egypt and the Middle East in the late 1800s and 1900s. Who liked to do, what made me think about was when he did his photography, because he was a pioneer of archaeology, but also a pioneer of using photography as well. And he would often use pinhole cameras, because he felt that pinhole cameras gave you the truest reproduction of the actual scene. And he didn't like to use lenses, glass lenses, because they introduced distortion and change things. So I thought, oh, that's interesting. It got me thinking about focal lengths. But before that, an ad. Not our usual ad, because this is a non-ad week for GoToMeeting. Excuse me, sorry for doing. So I thought I'd throw in a quick plug for a podcast that I talk about all the time anyway, which is the Film Photography Podcast. You can find their stuff over at filmphotographyproject.com. You can subscribe on iTunes or download it, or subscribe it on various other RSS readers, feeders, and podcatchers. Don't be put off by the film aspect of it. The Film Photography Podcast is run by a guy called Mike Rasso, and he has this whole team of helpers who change, and there's regulars, and it's real fun. It's really, really fun. Although they concentrate on film, their attitude towards going out and shooting and having a great time with lots of different cameras and lots of different techniques, and the sheer enthusiasm of the guys is really good. And because they're looking at old cameras, there isn't the same concentration as you get on lots of podcasts about you know, the latest kit and what kit can I buy to make my photography better, when we all know that buying kit doesn't make photography better. Practicing and looking at great photographs makes your photography better. But most of all, it's fun. They're brilliant guys. They're a real laugh. And the podcast comes out every 2 weeks. Occasionally they'll throw in extra ones. And it's very, very good indeed. So if you haven't already, go to filmphotographyproject.com and subscribe to the Film Photography Podcast. It really is very good indeed. Oh, and they've got a meetup in London on the 9th of June. I've got work, unfortunately. But if you can get yourself up there, I'm sure it'll be absolutely fantastic. Right, so back to the lie of the land. So as I said, famous archaeologist Flinders Petrie, or Petrie, liked to use pinhole cameras, because a pinhole camera is basically a box with a tiny hole in it. That's all you do, you just put a hole in the side of the box. And that is a simple, well, a non-lens, I guess. And as the light passes through, you then get a reproduction of the scene on the back of the box, and that's where you put your film. Lots of people still use pinhole photography today. And the clarity, sharpness of the photos depends on, you know, the smallness and the cleanness of that hole. I think there's Harman have just produced a pinhole camera that lots of people are raving about, and I think tips from the top floor guy Chris Marquardt, he's working on a pinhole camera as well. They're very interesting things because you don't have to focus them. Everything's in the depth of field is infinite, but it doesn't mean everything's incredibly sharp. There tends to be a quite softness. I've done a little bit of pinhole photography when I had the Lens Baby system for my digital camera, and yeah, it was great fun. You just have to use a tripod and everything. But back to Flinders Petrie, he used pinhole because he recognised the fact that as soon as you introduce glass to a photographic process, you introduce distortion. Because that lens has to be curved to guide the light through the aperture and then onto the film plane or onto the digital sensor. And whoever makes or designs that lens has to choose the angle of view. And often that angle of view will necessitate different camera to subject distances, which alters the perspective and makes it different from what we see with our eyes. And so, you know, I thought, it's really interesting, isn't it, how to think about how the glass we use on the front of our cameras, whether it be a compact camera, a mobile phone, or a digital SLR, or a film SLR, really affects the images we take. And especially with when you're using zooms, and zoom, big zooms, you know, to say on like a bridge camera that can go from wide angle through to 20 times zoomed up, we tend to just think about that zoom as a different way of cropping the photograph, you know, a way of getting closer to what we want to see. We don't think about how that different focal length affects the image. And because that's what we're doing, by zooming in and out, what you're doing is you're changing the focal length of the camera. Now, changing the focal length, changing the zoom, doesn't... the first thing to realise is it doesn't affect the perspective of the photograph. The perspective is the same whether you're at wide angle or you're zoomed all the way in. What affects perspective is the camera to subject distance, so how far away you are from the thing you're taking photographs of. But by taking the same pictures of the same subject at different camera to subject distances, that is different focal lengths, we can really alter the look of a photograph. And probably one of the easiest ways to get your head around this to start off with is think about the fisheye lens. You know, those classic BMX or skateboard shots that you'll see, or building shots where everything is curved over. You know, there's this massive view, probably 180 degrees, you know, that's squished into one photograph, and lots of fisheye lenses are actually, you get a round image out of them, and you get all this stuff squashed in. It's only the things right in the middle that would go straight. So imagine you're looking at a fisheye view of, I don't know, New York City skyline. You know, all the buildings to the edge are all curved over, almost from horizontal, from vertical to horizontal. And that's an extreme look, isn't it? And wide angles are a similar sort of thing to that. And if you're thinking of a wide angle, say of like I don't know, the 18mm end on an 18-55 on a crop sensor digital camera, or 28mm on a full frame digital or a film SLR, or just at the widest angle on your compact camera, you know, you get lots of things in. And it's a wider view than you would see with your own eyes. And if you know, to test that out, just, you know, hold the camera up in front of you and look through the viewfinder on the LCD screen at the back, and then drop the camera and look with your eye and see what the difference is. You know, move your hand in front of the lens and see where your hand is till your hand disappears, then look up and see if you can still see it with your eye that way. And you'll see that there is a real difference. But it's not just all about the angle of view that is then fitted to your photograph. It's about the perspective, so how far away you are from your subject. And what that means is at a wide angle, things get further away very, very quickly. So imagine you're standing on a road, and you know, like in the Nevada desert, and this road zooming off into the distance. If you're using a wide-angle lens, the road will be really wide where you are. But then the two sides of the road, which obviously are parallel as they run away, start to converge very, very quickly, like a triangle, as they meet on the horizon. And that's what wide-angle lenses are very good at. Imagine the same scene with, say, telegraph poles down the side of the road. And the first telegraph pole will be really high, but then the second one is probably half the height, and the second, you know, a quarter of the height, as they zoom away into the distance. And also with a wide angle, what you'll get is you always get a little bit of distortion, or barrel distortion, they tend to call it, where things at the edges tend to curve a little bit. And depending on the, I don't like using the word quality, but the aspects of a particular lens, you'll get different amounts of curvature, and that can create different effects. So, for example, if you're near a building and you're pointing your camera even slightly up, the camera, the building might well appear to loom over you or lean backwards as the converging lines of the sides of the building zoom away, and can produce very dynamic images. This means that you can get lots of distance between subjects. So if you're taking a photograph of, say, a group of people, you know, the person closest to you will appear a lot closer to you, well, than if you were looking at them with your eye. But the people behind them will seem a lot further away, because, as I said, things move away very, very, very quickly. Small objects in the foreground as well can become dominant. And that's often why you'll see landscape photographers make sure when they're using a wide-angle lens that they'll have something dominant in the foreground, like a rock or a tree or something that catches your eye, and then that will then draw your eye through the photograph. Because, as I said, because things get far away very, very quickly with a wide-angle lens, you do sometimes have to have some sort of mechanism that allows people to look through the photograph, so it doesn't just look like everything's far away. I mean, you know, if you make that artistic decision to do that, then there. With wide-angle lens as well, you tend to look maybe a little bit taller, and the view is a little bit taller, because if you can imagine, because everything is zooming away from the lens fast, the ground is as well. So often it's best, a choice is to bend down and get low faster. Wide-angle landscapes and cityscapes can be really dramatic. But again, watch out for those things bending over and things being too far away and too small. But that's a tool that you can use. And if you do layer the photograph, the fact that you also have a larger depth of field with wide-angle lenses means that everything can be crisp and in focus. And that can be a really nice effect. Think of like Ansel Adams or something like that. When you're actually taking pictures of people, though, wide-angle portraits can distort features. Not always that flattering. But often they're very, very dramatic. And this is a aspect of the fact that if you're doing a wide-angle picture, if you put your lens at wide-angle and try and do like a headshot of somebody, you've got to get right in their face. So you get this great connection between the subject and the viewer of the photograph, because the photographer is so close. You know, the subject of the photograph cannot miss the fact that your camera lens is 2 feet away from their head. And that creates a certain tension, perhaps, or intimacy, perhaps. And it means you've got to be pretty brave if you're a street photographer shooting wide angle. But you get that connection between the camera or the viewer of the photograph and the subject. And that might be an intimate connection, or maybe quite a hostile one, but there we go. As we move up the focal lengths, and say we move towards 50mm on a full-frame camera, 35mm, you get less of this distortion. And remember, maybe what I should also say now is, if you're using an SLR with a zoom, or a bridge camera with a zoom, where the focal lengths are marked on the lens, on the barrel. You know, just try it one day. You know, we all tend to make the mistake of starting off when we take our camera out of the bag and turn it on, of having it at 28mm or 18mm. And with compact, even worse, you just turn it on and then you look through the lens and you take pictures, don't you? Well, really what we should be doing is zooming in a little bit. So we start off at 50mm, what some people could call the standard view. So then we can make the artistic decision to zoom in and to zoom out, not just to crop our photographs differently, but to give us, excuse me, a different focal length for a different effect, whether we want everything zooming away from the camera, or as I'll talk about, telescopic end of the focal length, whether we want to compress a scene that way. But anyway, with like 50mm or 35mm on a crop sensor, you get less distortion, more natural straighter sides, and you may well find you have to back off further from scenes because you can't fit it all in. You might even have to do a stitched panorama. Often it can be worth it because it gives you more natural looking photographs. Your buildings aren't all bending over, your lines all aren't all converging. You know, you don't think they're a wide angle. You know, if you look at, say, some classic, say, city shots, especially ones of New York, and the names of photographers aren't springing to my mind at the moment, but, you know, the typical black and white poster images you see of the Empire State Building or the Chrysler Building, typically, if you look at them on the print or on the poster, the lines of the side of the building are parallel, aren't they? They're going up straight. It's not like a rocket going towards each other. Obviously, the top of the Chrysler Building or the top of the Empire State, they are. But they're like that. Now, often these guys would be using film cameras with tilt-shift lenses, medium format, large format, so you can get around that. But the other reason is they'll be using not a wide-angle focal length. They'll be using a longer focal length to avoid the problem of converging lines and perspective distortion. So it can be very powerful, the standard focal length of round about 50mm. So have a play with that. Now, when we add a bit more zoom, when we go telephoto, so when we move beyond the 50mm, when we start to zoom in a lot, things can get really interesting. I mean, we're all aware that when we're taking photographs of people, if we want them to look flattering, we should be using the longer end of the telephoto range. You know, like some people talk about the fact that an 85mm lens on an SLR can be like a bit of a sweet spot, or 135 might be the sweet spot of their lens. Because what's happening is, if you're doing a headshot with somebody with 135 or an 85mm lens, all your zoom set to those focal lengths, you've got to stand further away. So your camera to subject distance is longer. So that means the relative distance between the person's nose and you and their eyes and you is a lot less than it is when you're right up next to them. So that means that their nose is going to look more in proportion to their face, whereas when you're up really close with a wide angle lens, that nose, in proportion to the distance between the nose and the camera and their eyes and the camera, is a lot more, isn't it? And so that's why it's more flattering to back off and use a longer focal. But we know that. You know, I've talked about that a lot in the past. But it's also, with the longer focal lengths, you've got more separation of photographer from subject as well. So that intimacy can't really be there because you're further away. But you probably find you capture more unguarded moments because you are further away and the subject doesn't know that you're picking that up. Subjects become less guarded. I mean, if you use the long zoom length and they don't know you're taking pictures of them, you know, watch out. But obviously they won't know you're there at all. But, you know, even in when you're deliberately taking portraits of somebody, because of the fact you're standing 10 feet away, 15 feet away, you know, they're not going to feel as self-aware and self-conscious as they would when you're in their face with an 18mm wide-angle lens and the camera's going ching 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 right in front of them, let alone if you're using flash as well. So with longer focal lengths, we can then imagine that we're pulling sections out of a scene. Maybe we're getting a bit abstract, we're getting a bit artistic. And we're getting a smaller depth of field as well, because the longer your focal length, the tighter the depth of field gets. And you're almost like you're peering into this secret world. But also remember, go back to the example I gave at the beginning when I was talking about a road. You're standing on this road in the Nevada desert, and it's a straight road that goes off into the distance. With a wide-angle lens, it starts wide, and it's like a triangle. You know, the opposing sides meet each other as they hit the horizon. You know, they zoom together. And those telephone poles, the first one's big, the small one, the second one's half the size, and the third one's a quarter of the size, etc. Everything's zooming away. Take that same scene again, but with a telephoto lens on, or your zoom sectors on, and all of a sudden that road is straight. You know, the sides of the road zoom off into the distance, but they're not joining, they're just going out straight. Those telephone poles, suddenly they all seem closer together. And they're not lots of different sizes. Take a photo of a group of people with telephoto lens, and they all seem closer together. Imagine you're standing on a racetrack with motor cars or motorbikes zooming around it, and you're at the end of a straight, and they're coming towards you, and then they're turning off. They're zipping, turning to the right. With a wide-angle lens, they'd seem far away, and even, in fact, when the lead bike got to you, even if a bike was fairly close behind it, when you press the shutter, the wide-angle lens, because of the distance-to-subject ratio, would appear further away. Take that same picture with a telephoto lens, with the same framing, and that second bike will appear to be right on top of the other one. Things appear really, really close. So it gives you that extra artistic edge. Very, very interesting. You know, try a photo walk where you deliberately put your zoom, you know, up there, 85, 100, 150, 200 millimetres, and see what you come out with. It'll be a bit of a challenge, but you'll come up with some very different shots. Okay, well, that's it. There's my little spiel on the lie of the lens. I know it's a bit similar to previous podcasts I did a while ago, but often I get re-inspired to talk about the same subjects again, as I did there. Remember, if you've got any ideas for subjects or questions or ideas you'd like me to discuss on the podcast, email me, scalespeeder@gmail.com, that's scalespeeder@gmail.com, and I'll see what I can come up with, even if it's something I haven't got a clue about. I do quite enjoy going in and doing a bit of research and trying things out for myself. Well, thanks to everybody for taking part in the Flickr group. Posting the photographs, some fantastic work going on there. Remember, we still have the current photo assignment, which is two things going on at the moment in the same thread. There's The Kiss of the Sun and From a Blank Canvas. Thanks to Everyday Jones, who do the intro and outro music for the podcast. You can find their stuff for free download at everydayjones.com. But most of all, thanks to you for listening, well, downloading and listening to the podcast. My name's Rob from RobLoveFoto.com, and hopefully pretty soon I'll see you on Flickr.